Hey everyone, welcome to the 348th episode of the Internet of Things podcast. This is your host, Stacey Higginbotham, and your co-host,
Kevin Toefel.
And we have an awesome Thanksgiving special for everybody here in the U.S. and otherwise everybody else. It's just a normal episode for you. We're going to be talking about Tile. They sold out. Who bought them? We're also going to be talking about no-code AI and why it's important and becoming a growing place for investment. Wear OS is more popular than you might think, and we'll talk about why. We'll also be talking about Aquara. They've got a new device out there for the HomeKit crew, and Samsara, which is a roughly six-year-old now IoT, enterprise IoT company, has filed for their IPO, and we'll talk about what their financials say. We will also hear from our guest this week, who is Stephen Scherer, who is the CEO of SmaxTech, which is actually making a sensor that cows swallow. So we'll be talking about making ruggedized sensors, connectivity, and figuring out how to tell if a cow is happy. Yay! And because it's time for us to count our blessings and feel thankful, we'll talk a little bit about things we're thankful for here in the world of IoT. So let's get started with, let's talk about thankfulness. Let's just get it all right there, get us in the right mood. Kevin, I'm thankful for you and our listeners. Ba-ba-ba-ba!
Aw, as am I. You know, it may not be Thanksgiving around the world, but we are definitely blessed and thankful for all the listeners of this show and the people that read the posts on stacyandiot.com. I'd like to say I'm thankful for Thread, but that didn't happen this year. But, well, that's not true. I mean, I've got a taste of the Thread experience this year with the Eve products, and I'm super excited and stoked for 2022. So,
talking about Matter?
Well, that too.
Okay. I'm just like, yeah, I'm thankful for Thread. But
I inadvertently lumped them in my head together, but I only said Thread. So yeah. So I'll just say I'm thankful for HomeKit since I've transitioned this year. And I gotta say, I'm pretty happy.
You seem happy. You're not writing the kinds of cranky posts that I'm writing. I should also say that I'm thankful for our sponsors. And I should tell you that this week's show is brought to you by Twilio and Juniper. So let's talk about Juniper for a second. Sprawling IoT networks are prime targets for attackers. And once infected, they can quickly bring your networks down and leave you vulnerable. And that's why Juniper has teamed up with WootCloud to bring complete visibility and context-aware control for devices the moment they join your network. Please check out ai.mist.com/StacyOnIoT to hear from experts at Juniper and WootCloud. They'll share their tips and tricks for identifying and securing IoT networks, which I know all of you want to know about. Plus, you can watch a demo to claim a free Juniper Mist Wi-Fi access point, the only access point in the industry with a port dedicated to IoT. That's ai.mist.com/StacyOnIoT. And you can register to get a free AP. Woo! Okay, in addition to sponsors, I and my audience, and you, Kevin, I am really thankful for, so many things, but probably I'm thankful that everybody in the community is still doing cool stuff, and it leaves me with things to learn about and write about. And I feel like people are really, yes, we still are unveiling security flaws and privacy issues every day. But I also think the industry's getting overall a lot better. So I'm very thankful for that. I'm thankful that consumers are recognizing that some of these devices probably don't belong in their home because they are pretty intrusive. And I'm thankful that we're talking more about sustainability and how to make projects that optimize for more than just cost savings. So those are some of the things that I'm thankful for. And I'm also thankful for my June oven, which I am every year, and that I use for cooking my Thanksgiving dinner. I'm just going to throw that out there because it is a food-related holiday, and I'm a food-loving person.
Ours is going right now, prepping for Thanksgiving.
Really?
Yeah, she's baking something down there.
Nice. And do you have big plans?
We're just going to spend time with my family, my sister, her family. Nothing major. I'm mostly offline. mostly offline, although I got a 20-page paper I got to get finished up. So that's, you know, that's what I'm thankful for right there. The fact not only that at my age, I can go back to school, do a graduate program at a prestigious university online for relatively cheap. It's only $800 a class, which is insane. And the fact that you, Stacey, give me the breathing room when I need it to get my stuff done as well as get stuff done here.
You're welcome. I'm like, I don't know what to say to that.
Well, okay.
You're awesome and you're welcome.
Go
okay.
You.
Exactly. Okay. The Kevin and Stacey thankful fest has probably concluded. The love fest has concluded. I noticed that he did not say he was thankful for all my singing, which might be a hint that I'm just not going to follow in the new year. So there's that. You're like, So,
well, in fairness, I've heard the singing. These people really haven't.
That is true.
No, you sing well, actually.
I sing on the show very occasionally. Kevin gets double the singing that y'all do. And, you know,
at
poor
least
guy.
Double.
Kevin's like, sometimes it feels like infinity more. Okay. We'll talk about the deals. This is a week before a holiday, so not a lot of stuff has happened. We are recording a day early, which means if something happened Wednesday, you'll hear about it next week. Sorry. I got to get started on making my cranberry sauce and brining my turkey, so chop, chop. All right. News this week. Tile, the maker of, it may not be exactly the first, but it was probably the most popular personal device tracking device. They sold to Life 360 for $205 million.
That deal is a Black Friday price, in my opinion.
We'll talk about that in a second. I just wanted to say that this deal is not closed yet. It is expected to close in the first quarter of next year. So let's talk about this because, first off, y'all may be familiar with Tile, Bluetooth tracking system. They did add ultra-wideband and some AR features for their most recent generation of trackers this year. But Life 360 is a software company. They make an app that you stick on your phone and a lot of families use it. This is a very mainstream app, I would call it. And it's kind of like Find My iPhone, but for people who don't have iPhones. And you can see where people are in your family. You can share messages between them. It's like a family communication app. They've done deals in the past. They've done deals with like BMW and ADT, I think. They've done a lot of really interesting deals to like share family location. So I think this deal is interesting partially because of the price, and we'll talk about that, but also because with Apple's AirTags, which is what Tile was kind of suddenly going up against, they didn't have a way to like, Apple AirTags don't really have a way for you to share like shared devices. Like the car is here, right? You can only share the car to one iPhone, like the main iPhone.
It basically tells you where you park your car, but nobody else that's around you, like if you're the driver, nobody's going to have that information.
Yeah, so it's possible that like Life 360 could give you the ability to share some of that location information with your family. So the car keys are here. The, you know, car is here. The, I don't know, dog is over there.
Yeah, it's a very similar service. I mean, you could throw an AirTag in a car and everybody would have access to it. Well,
no, can't share it to
see
many
your own
devices.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Good point.
That's the one like possible good feature that comes from this deal that we don't see on like the AirTags. Also, anybody who's in the Android universe, hello me, doesn't get to use AirTags.
Yeah. And this company's been around. They're actually, I don't remember when they were founded, but I can recall seeing Life 360 and other competing apps on Android very early after Android launched with the the App Store or now Google Play Store. So this is a company that's been around almost since the beginning of Android.
Yeah, no, they've been I think they had like, remember proprietary apps on the mobile phones? They used to have like a Verizon iPhone app, I swear.
Oh, like J2ME apps and such. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they were founded in 2008. So, okay. So,
that's the year Android hit. Yep. That makes sense. That would be Android.
Yeah. So, I mean, so Kevin, you want to talk about the price and whatever else?
I don't get it. But then again, I'm not one to follow financials that companies do too much. So this deal is valued at $205 million, which seems low to me, given the brand recognition of Tile, how many they've sold, which I think 40 million devices?
Yeah, around 40 million devices since they launched.
Yeah, it just seems like a small number for what they are, but it could just be me.
They've also raised over $90 million. So if you look at this as a deal that is like 2x, it is, well, so it did $45 million in growth equity back in 2019, and then it did a $40 million debt round in September of this year. My hunch is what they saw was that once Apple released the AirTags and started adding UWB, they didn't have a huge opportunity. Even though they had been building like their Tile technology, the Bluetooth finding technology, they had been building it into things like Bose headsets and I think Land Rover, like cars.
Some laptops even.
Yeah. So they had been building out this ecosystem. But then what happened is Apple launched the ultra wideband effort and suddenly everybody was buying the AirTags. Everybody wanted to be on that because it was more precision. So it was better technology for finding than Bluetooth. And it had the magical Apple brand. And Apple said that they would open up that ecosystem, but they haven't yet. So my bet is that Life360 was like, you know what? We want this and we'll give you money to get out of this because I don't know.
True. The other bit to this that I'm still makes me question the valuation is that Tile back in May said that the trackers would work with Amazon Sidewalk Network because you mentioned UWB support and so on, but specifically it was going to work with Amazon Sidewalk Network, and I'm sure it still will. But so with Amazon at least somewhat involved, I'm just surprised that either A, they didn't pick it up, or B, that it didn't go for more.
Well, the Tile Network opened in June. We're almost 6 months into that now, and we have heard nothing. And I have emailed Amazon to find out what the status is and how much coverage the Sidewalk Network provides. Crickets. They don't comment on it. My question is, maybe Amazon can't get Sidewalk off the ground fast enough to provide Tile the runway it thought it needed.
That could be.
Or maybe Amazon's like, yeah, we'll do a deal with you, Tile. And now Tile heard that Amazon's working on some of its own trackers just to screw them, because that is a very Amazon thing to do.
Oh, that would be, yes.
So yes. It's hard out there for a company. That's the bottom line. So there you go. Hey, let's talk about no-code AI. And if y'all are like, what the what? Kevin's going to explain.
I wanted to bring this story up for a couple reasons. One, it's an interesting little startup. It's called Clever, C-L-E-V-R. It was started by basically a university student who originally was not into computer science at all, but got into it. And now he's, I guess, 21, 22 years old, and he started this company. It's available for public beta now, but it does have a huge wait list. I tell you that up front. So if you want to go sign up, you go to Clever, clevr-ai.com, and you can sign up. And that's one reason, the fact that it's a small little startup. The second reason is we often talk on the show about AI and ML, and I know our more tech-savvy listeners understand the benefits and what that really means, but we talk about it in somewhat nebulous terms, and that may not resonate with everybody. So since those two technologies are really a big part of the future of IoT, if not the present, I thought this was a good way to spotlight this no-code way to get a little understanding of AI and ML, and that's what Clever does. It basically lets you, say, upload a few photos, for example, and it just creates a machine learning model that now any camera that can access that model can tell you if those photos were of your dog or your cat, for example. Or maybe you're into coding a little bit. Maybe you want to do some Python coding. It can like create code for you. They have APIs that are easy to use. It's just a very clean drag and drop way to, as again, that's what we mean by low code, no code, to create AI and ML. That's what they're trying to do, democratize ML for everyone. So I just thought it was interesting and worth a mention because, again, we talk about these two technologies, but they are really, really detailed and hard to understand if you don't have some kind of concept to other than, well, my smartphone can recognize a package. But how does it do that? I want to learn how to do it. You can do that with Clever.
Yeah. And like Clever is not the only company. This is for text-oriented and maybe image-oriented things, yes?
Mm-hmm. Image, yep.
Image, okay. And I've also covered a company called Qeexo. That's Q-U-E-E-X-O. They build AI models without using any code, and they use things like vibration sensing, motion sensing, and sound. And they can build a model just by interacting with something for like 3 to 5 minutes. Actually, if you interact a little longer, you might get better results. But the idea here is there's a wave of companies and startups that are coming out trying to make it really easy because there is no way that we can scale out our programming education to everyone in a way that it'll be necessary to use all of the sensor data coming in, right? So we need ways to make that much easier. Right now, we've got companies where they're like C3, for example. You just give them all your data and they're like, blah, la, 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 magical machine happenings. And then they spit out like, oh, this is the insights you need based on this data. We're going to see so much more of that. It's going to be so much more interesting and accessible, so not as expensive. And I can't wait.
Same here.
Okay, you know what else I can't wait for? I am in the market for a new fitness wearable and a fitness tracker, basically. I really want heart rate monitoring. I want high quality sleep. I'd rather not pay a subscription for the basics. And I'm thinking of like leaving Fitbit after, oh my gosh, a decade.
You have another requirement too.
Oh, what's my other requirement?
It can't be something that Apple makes.
Oh, right. It can't be the Apple Watch because I don't work in the Apple ecosystem. So I've been looking at the Garmin stuff and I tweeted about that and I got some really good recommendations. So thank y'all. But now I'm wondering if I should look at the Wear OS again because...
Why? No, you said because why?
Because there's new research that shows how Wear OS is gaining ground in the smartwatch market, which I'm like, what?
Yeah, I mean, Apple has run away with the smartwatch market for the latter part of, I'll say, 6 years at least, maybe 7, because they're watchOS 7.
So the latest data from Counterpoint Research has Wear OS market share going from around 3% in Q3 of 2020 to 17% in Q3 of 2021, which is a big difference.
It is a big difference, and a lot of that has come at the expense of Apple's watchOS. Because during the same time period, it went from 28% market share down to 21.8% market share, which is a pretty sizable drop, in fact. You know, Wear OS, maybe it's finally found its footing. And I say that as somebody who originally tested and used the first Android Wear watches when they came out before the Apple Watch. In fact, dozens of them back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't touched them lately because it really hasn't made progress on the software side. It was held back on the hardware side with certain Qualcomm silicon inside. But what's different now is finally Samsung and Google earlier this year said, hey, we're going to combine our efforts into Wear OS. So Samsung has its own Tizen platform that it's used since day one. And it's actually done pretty well on its own, but it didn't have the third-party ecosystem that Wear OS has. Now, they, being Samsung, gained the Wear OS ecosystem for third-party apps, and Google gains the brand recognition from the popular Samsung Galaxy Watch series. There's still hardware issues. There's still software fixes that need to happen. But just from a branding perspective, I think people are a little more comfortable with Wear OS, especially if it's on a Samsung device, such as the new Galaxy Watch 4.
Yeah, and while Fitbit doesn't have huge market share, very small, they actually next year will start making Wear OS wearables as well. So not that I'm thinking...
Yes, because Google bought Fitbit earlier this year.
Right. Yes. All right. So moving right along over to the smart home, Aquara, which is a... They make a smart home hub for HomeKit. That's so hard to say. They've got a new camera with 2K resolution and it's a pan and tilt cam. Dun 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 dun. And it will also connect to it's also a Zigbee hub.
It's a Zigbee 3 hub, so just like their other hubs, so this could replace a hub or supplement one if you have one already. It uses Wi-Fi and Zigbee. As you mentioned, 2K camera. It has AI facial, pet, and gesture recognition, It's pan and tilt, 360 degrees. It works with HomeKit Secure Video, but it also works with Madam A and Google Assistant as well. Not, they don't have secure video implemented at the platform level. HomeKit does. So this is really, if you're in the market for a device on any ecosystem, this will work for you. And surprisingly, even though it's HomeKit and HomeKit Secure Video compatible, it's not that expensive. It's $110.
Well, it's, I mean, it's only $2,000. I mean, it is, you're right. It's
only
not that I
2K. It's, where's my 8K 3DVR?
I want my 4K cameras. No, I do not want to see the person who's stealing my packages that well. Okay, that's fair. Okay, yeah, you're right. This is a good deal. I'm silly. Ignore me. I don't get excited.
I think it's really handy for people who already have a lot of Zigbee devices in their home, you know, because most other cameras are not going to have that functionality if you need to, you know, extend the range of your Zigbee network and so on. The fact that it works with all three platforms is huge. Are there cheaper cameras? Sure, especially even with pan and tilt. But there are also much more expensive cameras, $200-$400, and they aren't even HomeKit compatible, nor therefore HomeKit Secure Video, which is one of the reasons that I do appreciate HomeKit, because I know all that video is encrypted and even Apple can't see it and so on.
Okay. And so if you want to add a smart camera to your holiday wish list, go for it. This will be out this year, Kevin? This is out, right?
You can get it now.
Today. Just you wait, y'all. Just a couple weeks away, we'll start talking about CES and things we see there and are expecting to see there. I should tell everyone, Kevin will not be at CES unless I convince him in the next month to go. But I will be there. So you can reach out and say hi to me if you would like. Yay! Hello.
You can ping me on Twitter and say hi if you like, because I'll be at home.
You can also say hi to Kevin, and he'll probably get back to you because he won't be running around miles and miles of show floor. Yay,
yes.
Kevin.
My feet feel better already.
Don't they, though? Okay. Last story, and this is a fun one for me because I covered this company's launch back in 2015, but Samsara has filed for an IPO. They actually filed confidentially for one in September of this year, and now they have filed publicly, so their S1 is available. And it's worth looking at their S1 because this is a company that built, they came out very ambitious. They were going to build like the underlying platform for IoT sensors that could run across, it was going to be a cloud, it was going to be sensors, and they were going to run across so many, like, it was a horizontal play. So all the industries. What happened was they were like, oh, this really needs to be customized on a per industry basis. And so they set to work doing cold chain management and asset tracking. And from there, they started introducing other lines of service and capabilities. And now here they are, ready to go public. They're not profitable. I'm just going to tell you that. Their revenue is up. They brought in $303 million of revenue for the 9 months ending October 30th, and they had a net loss on that of $102 million. Their net loss is shrinking. Their revenue is going up. They have a lot of customers. They have over 25,000 total customers, and about 93% of their recurring annual revenue, or annual recurring revenue, as they call it, ARR, comes from the customers that spend more than $5,000 a year with them. So this isn't, I mean, if you're a big enterprise, I would hope you're spending way more than $5,000 a year to track your IoT stuff. But a lot of these are pilots and they're just going to get bigger, hopefully. And you can see where they started from, because like about 40% of their customers are in transportation or wholesale and retail trade. So that's that cold chain and asset tracking kind of effort. They've got construction, field services, logistics, and you know, the rest are pretty small. But I was really excited to see this. I miss the days when companies went public when they were profitable, but who am I to think about this? So, and this time next year, they anticipate having almost $500 million in recurring revenue. So we'll see if that happens or not. But yeah, congratulations, Samsara, on filing. And we'll see what happens when you actually list and what you price at and how that price then goes moving forward. All right. Well, that concludes the news segment of the show. Now it is time for the Internet of Things podcast hotline, which is where we take your questions and hopefully answer them. And the IoT podcast hotline is brought to you by Fairy. Very is a fully distributed IoT engineering firm that partners with its clients to build systems for smart manufacturing, smart energy, utilities, consumer electronics, and connected wellness. You can discover what Very's multidisciplinary teams can do for you at www.verypossible.com/services. And now for the podcast. This is November, and in the month of November, we are giving away our review copy of the NanoLeaf Lines lights. You'll get a starter kit and three additional lines, I believe. And it's a smoking good deal. So give us a call at 512-623-7424. And if you call us before November 30th at midnight, you will be entered to win. Woo! That's midnight ET, by the way. Okay. This week's question comes from Brian, and it's actually not a smart home question. So thank you, Brian. This is kind of refreshing. Let's hear it.
Hi, my name's Brian. I'm from Wilmington, Delaware. So my question is, so the infrastructure bill that just passed recently, I've heard they're doing something with making it so preventing people from being able to drive drunk using a technology, but I believe it is not specified. I'm wondering if you had any information on that. Thank you very much.
Okay, Brian. We can't tell you exactly what will happen because nobody knows. The mandate itself says vehicles must be equipped with, quote, advanced drunk and impaired driving prevention technology. That's it.
Yeah. And there's also a time frame in the law here that allows new car manufacturers time to figure out what they're going to do, how they're going to do it, and then implement their solutions. It will be no earlier than 2 years from the passage of the Build Back Better bill, but no later than three. So we're 2 to 3 years out before seeing this being forced upon the manufacturers legally. So we're ways off. But you know, basically what they're saying is go figure out how you can, and I'll just read the text here from the bill. I have the bill in front of me. Oh my goodness, is it long?
That's what happens when you spend $1 trillion.
I know. You get a trillion pages. Yes. Passively monitor the performance of a driver of a motor vehicle to accurately identify whether that driver may be impaired and prevent or limit motor vehicle operation if an impairment is detected. It can also passively and accurately detect whether the blood alcohol concentration of a driver is equal to or greater than the legal limit, which is interesting because I think that varies by state. And then, you know, prevent or limit operation if the blood alcohol concentration is above the legal limit. So there's no discussion on how this is going to be done. So, I mean, we have some thoughts on how this can be done and maybe even some concerns on how it might be done, what challenges it might bring. So, I mean, a lot of cars these days, I'm thinking new cars in particular, and this only applies to new cars. A lot of them have the smart safety features with cameras on the outside and so on. And they also use those cameras to detect the lines on the road, both the white solid line and the solid or dashed yellow lines, and they're used for semi-autonomous cruise control where the car can keep itself in the lane. And it could be pretty easy to detect if somebody is impaired by using the data when that system is not engaged, and it can see if they're getting in and out, weaving around when they should be driving in a straight line. So, I mean, that's one, I think, easy potential.
Or combining that with driving way too slowly or way too quickly.
Yes.
I would also say it's important to note that this is a passive system. Things like breathalyzers in your car where you have to blow into it, those exist where your key lock won't turn until you've passed a breathalyzer. That is mandated by courts for repeat offenders and drunken driving accidents. But that is an active system that is not passive. So for passive systems, we're looking for some sort of AI-mediated thing that could be what Kevin suggested. It might actually be something like there's a lot of effort right now in tracking fatigue among truck drivers. And you could see some system like that come into cars. It may include a camera for like understanding where someone's gaze is resting, but it may not. Again, we don't know. So there's a lot more we don't know. I will also say the same law requires some sort of technology in vehicles also to prevent deaths of infants in car seats. And we've already actually talked to some companies like working in the 60 gigahertz range, wireless range. So they're actually looking for putting these wireless sensors on the roofs of cars to measure if there's a person in a seat or not. So that actually might be also implemented in cars. You could also use something like that to detect, like, is someone's head dropping or falling asleep in a less, I guess, less sensitive than camera way. So those are things to think about. We don't know what it's going to look like. It'll probably be a mix of sensors and cameras and AI. And that leads to camera, like, a lot of questions. So the ACLU is already thinking about this because they're like, what? So, like, if it's a camera, who gets access to this data? What happens to it? How long does it stick around, right? Does it stay on the car and it gets reset every 24 hours? Another thing to think about with this is who's going to be tracking how the AI responds? Like, is the AI going to be good with people who are older drivers? How is it going to determine if someone's fundamentally unsafe? So we could see, like, questions about that. We'll probably see lawsuits around that if cars, like, if someone can't start their car to get to work because maybe they're differently abled in some way and their head tilts to the side, but the car thinks they're drunk.
Right. False positives are a potential issue, as would be false negatives, which would render the system not as safe.
Right. So there's a lot of questions about this. And honestly, I don't think 2 to 3 years, given the way we roll, is enough time, but we'll see. And then as someone who, I am so for this, I'm so for some sort of technology that prevents drunken driving. I will say that straight off the bat, because I had a friend who died in a drunken driving accident. I am one of those people who, like, will literally take your keys and drag you home with me. You know, just, I have gotten on the wrong side of many friends because in Texas, it's not a big deal to drive drunk for a lot of people, unfortunately. So while I am for this, I think we're going to see a lot of blowback on something like this because, like, seatbelts are mandatory, but your car still starts if you don't have your seatbelt. Sure, it will ding at you and drive you nuts, but your car will still start.
Yeah. I mean, again, we don't have answers now because this has really just been not proposed, but settled as the law. And there is a 2 to 3 year time period. I can guarantee you we're going to be hearing about different implementations and we'll be talking about those over the next 2 to 3 years on the show because, you know, this is definitely worth discussing.
Yeah. And the other thing to note, I'll mention this, is this is not a punitive system. The idea here isn't that when you try to drive drunk, your car is going to tell on you. It's when you try to drive drunk, your car is just not going to start, which I think is important to note, especially as we think about, like, what happens to the video, blah, blah, blah.
I also wonder, I mean, we just talked last week and I had said I thought autonomous vehicles would be further along by now, at least when I was thinking about them 10 years ago. But what happens in the next 2 to 3 years if we do really see an uptake and an uptick in the technologies that make cars drive by themselves? Would you be able to be drunk and be driven home by your car?
If you have level 5 autonomy, sure. But if you've got, like, what Tesla calls autonomous, heck no.
Oh, no, we're not there yet. I agree. But people are going to fight it anyway because they will say the driver who is drunk could take the car over at any time.
Well, maybe you wouldn't be allowed to. Maybe with level 5 autonomy because it is technically...
That's not so passive after all.
Yeah, so... Well, no, I mean, because this is... I mean, it's not passive. It's passive monitoring. It's not passive...
Right, yeah. Right.
Anyway, I mean, yeah.
We'll see.
We will see. So expect to hear more on this. It was a good question, Brian. Hopefully this helped. Like many of our answers, it's not definitive, but, you know, we gave you more information to think about it yourself. If you would like to call us and be entered to win the Nano Leaf Lines, just give us a call at 512-623-7424. And that's it for the Internet of Things podcast hotline. Please stay tuned for our guest. This week's guest is Stephen Scherer, and we are going to be talking about smart cows, swallowed sensors, and sustainability. It's going to be awesome, so stay tuned. And now for a message from our sponsor. This week's sponsor is Twilio. Hey, everyone. We are taking a quick break from the Internet of Things podcast for a message from our sponsor. This week's sponsor is Twilio. And many know of Twilio as a provider of APIs for customer engagement, for example, over voice and IVR, SMS, and WhatsApp. But probably a lot of y'all don't know that Twilio has been offering cellular IoT connectivity for years. And I have with me Tobias Goebel, who is the product marketing principal at Twilio IoT. How's it going, Tobias?
Going great, Stacey. Thanks for having me on.
Yes. So your flagship IoT product offering is called Twilio SuperSIM. What makes it, well, super, in your opinion?
One of the main advantages of SuperSIM is that we have redundancy in the carriers we provide access to with automatic failover in case of a network outage.
So what does that mean for me as a customer, automatic failover?
So take our coverage in the U.S. You get T-Mobile and AT&T here, and very soon also Verizon, all on a single SIM. Or take the U.K. We offer Vodafone, EE, and Three there, among a couple other smaller ones. If Everything Everywhere, for instance, has an outage in a particular area, our SIM will enable the device to automatically switch over to, say, Vodafone. Depending on your use case, your IoT device might not even notice that there was an outage in the first place.
What industries are using it so far?
So we have a wide variety of customers using SuperSIM today across different verticals. Of course, the primary use cases for any IoT SIM are in fleet tracking and asset tracking. We have a lot of micro-mobility customers. So if you've driven one of those scooters, they're probably connected through Twilio. We also have a lot of customers in the healthcare space connecting their wearable devices for remote patient monitoring through SuperSIM.
Oh, that sounds pretty great. So how can our listeners give Twilio SuperSIM a try?
We offer a free trial to your listeners. Head over to twil.io/freesim to sign up. That's twil.io, as in Twilio, /freesim, all lowercase, one word. We also share some more product information and customer testimonials on SuperSIM there if you first want to do more research on your own.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the Internet of Things podcast. This is your host, Stacey Higginbotham, and today's guest is Stefan Scherer, who is the CEO of SmaxTech. Hello, Stefan. How are you today?
Hi, Stacey. Thanks for having me here today. Wonderful day here in Austria. And yeah, I'm glad to be with you.
Well, it is an also wonderful day here in Seattle, where I'm sitting. So excited to have you. We are going to be talking about the Internet of Cows. And honestly, I feel like I've been talking about the Internet of Cows since like probably 2014, when Dell started talking about outfitting dairy cows with technology to, I guess, make them better milkers. So why don't you give us a little bit of background on SmaxTech and what y'all are doing with cows?
Yeah, SmaxTech is the innovator for boluses, which are basically sensors that are swallowed by the cow, and we measure temperature, rumen activation, like the stomach, how the stomach of the cow is acting, activity of the cow, and also as an option, the pH value of the stomach of a cow, send it to a base station, then transmit the data to the cloud. And by doing so, we can assess the health and monitor the health, the well-being of the cow. And healthy cow give good milk.
Got it. Yes, I think there was a California dairy commercial, something. Oh, no, those were happy cows give the best milk. So close.
Absolutely.
All right. There's a lot to talk about with you from, oh my gosh, how do you build a sensor that lives inside of a cow? Because that seems like a pretty rugged environment to, how do you figure out what data correlates to the health of a cow? So let's first start on the data front, because y'all have been at this for a while. And initially, y'all started thinking one factor might matter and kind of decided that maybe something else would matter. So can you talk about the process of figuring out how to measure a cow's health?
Yeah, I mean, very similar as with human beings, one of a very important parameter, of course, is temperature. So if you, for example, have an infection, your temperature is rising. So this was probably, or is probably one of the most important parameters of the current health status. So we measure temperature at a very high resolution in the sub-degree range and at a very high resolution with the time-wise, So at very short intervals. So we get a constant temperature monitoring of the cow's temperature.
Are there any other factors that you've got to consider? I know that things like pH, and you may want to talk about how cows' stomachs are designed, because I don't know how many people know about cows' multiple stomachs.
Yeah, the cows are ruminant animals, which means that they eat the grass, for example, they swallow the grass, and then they are designed, if a predator would come, they could run away, then lay down somewhere else, and then they would the stomach would contract, and then the grass would come up again, and then they would start chewing, and then they would swallow it into another stomach where they can further process the food. This rumen gives us the possibility to put in a bolus, a sensor, that stays there permanently. This wouldn't be possible with, let's say, for example, human beings. Yeah? If we would swallow a sensor, at some point the sensor would exit again, our body. But with ruminant animals, the sensor can stay in the animal and constantly monitor activities, temperature, pH. Yeah? And maybe people would ask themselves, holy cow, you swallow this sensor, is the stomach big enough? But you must imagine that the stomach of a cow has the volume similar to your bathtub. Of course, depending on the size of your bathtub. But
holy mackerel.
Yeah.
That is a lot of cow stomach. Okay.
And the other thing, what I mentioned with pH value is a very important measure, such that if it's too much acid in the stomach, the bacteria would, for example, die, and then this whole process of digesting would be corrupted. Yeah? And of course, as we want to milk the cows, the rumen is kind of almost like the engine of the cow, and we just make sure that the engine is always running at perfect conditions.
Okay. And when you started with this, did you think, yes, let's measure the pH of the cow? Or did you think, oh, maybe we should focus on something else?
pH was the first value that was measured by SmexTech. It was a cooperation together with an Austrian research institute. There, the whole process of what's the perfect environment in a rumen, in the rumen of a cow, was explored. And so it started with pH. Then, of course, temperature came in, activity, and finally the rumen contraction itself. Yeah. So we can really now also measure the contraction of the rumen.
Okay. So there was the first sensor that measured pH, and that was kind of an academic project, it sounds like. And then you released a commercial sensor that did pH, activity. Can you talk about what you learned in trying to figure out what data mattered for the health of the cow? It wasn't seamless, right?
Yes, you're absolutely right, Stacey, because pH, if you approach an everyday farmer and say, hey, we can measure the pH of your dairy cows, he might ask, why or what for? So we need to give practical answers to everyday questions. And an everyday question would be, for example, when is my cow ready for calving? Or when is she in heat and she's ready for insemination? Or does she have milk fever or mastitis? Mastitis, which is one of the economically worst diseases for a dairy farmer. So these are the practical questions they want to have answered. And we had to transform the parameters we measure into answers to those questions.
Got it. And how long did that take?
Yeah, as you can imagine, I was a little too simple. It's not just transforming, answering those questions. It's also making the product robust, applicable, and also certified, because you need, for example, medical proof housings. You cannot just throw anything into a cow. Yeah? It has to be really proven, reliable, and approved. So this took quite some time. And as I said, our latest release was in September 2020. And this summer, we inaugurated SmexTech in USA and are ready to hit the American market.
Oh, congratulations. All right. Let's talk about your most recent sensor that's coming out, because you had to get all the data right. We had to get it medically certified. And then connectivity became your next challenge, because this thing is in the stomach of a cow. You've got agriculture. They may not have a lot of access to broadband. I don't know. So getting the connectivity right on this thing, what was the journey like?
Yeah, we had to get all the electronics right such that we get the data out of the cow into a LoRaWAN base station, which collects the data locally on the farm. And then we have a built-in SIM card that sends the data into the cloud, where we centrally process the data and are capable of applying artificial intelligence and big data process approaches. So for the customer, for the farmer, all he needs is an electronic power plug.
Oh, nice. So you just plug in the gateway, feed your cows some pills, and they're off to the races? Nope, there's probably an app.
Nope, you got it. Yeah, that's all he needs to do. Just put the boluses into the cow, and here we go.
So let's talk about the options and connectivity for cows, because I'm thinking, why not just swallow an NB-IoT module? Battery life, probably, or Bluetooth. So let's talk about the connectivity options, why you went with LoRaWAN for the sensor to gateway, and then cellular for the gateway.
Yeah, we decided on LoRaWAN because of a combination of energy consumption plus transmission distance, which is very good compromise on this technology, according to our development and research. And with the SIM card, because we really try to and work hard to make the life of our dairy farmers as easy as possible and the system to be set up as simple as possible. So you don't need an electrical engineer or some form of specialized local internet infrastructure at your barn, because this may not be there. The only time we would need a local network that you could plug into the gateway would be if there is zero cell phone signal available.
The other thing that y'all have built, so you've tracked, I think, new algorithms probably in terms of measuring pH in a cow's stomach. That feels like a challenge y'all overcame, figuring out connectivity. And then figuring out something that's supposed to live inside a cow's stomach for actually the lifetime of a cow. So let's quickly say, what is the lifetime of a cow?
This is heavily depending on for how long are farmers milking the cow. But typically in average, farmers use it probably in the range of 36 months that they actively milk the cow. And our battery lifetime is designed to live for at least 5 years in the cow.
Got it. Okay. So, that's a long time. So let's talk about the challenges of building something that is going to be in a highly acidic environment, sending out signals for 3 to possibly 5 years.
So what you want to make sure is that your housing is withstanding this environment and is not built too fragile, but at the same time doesn't shield your signal, of course, or doesn't interfere. Yeah, and then you have to imagine that cows not just would swallow our bolos, but cows, you find rocks, small rocks in a cow's stomach. Or imagine the daughter of the farmer would lose her mobile phone while playing in the barn. If they do, then the cow also could swallow the mobile phone. So you have all sorts of things in the stomach of a cow. And with all these constant contractions, yeah, the cow is ruminating. So the stomach is constantly increase and decreasing pressure in this environment. So your sensor has to withstand this environment and also this pressure changes and so on, temperature changes. So it's quite some experience to make this really reliable, stable, and durable.
Yeah. So you can't make it out of metal because that's like a little Faraday cage. You probably have medical grade plastics, I guess.
Yes. Yes. Okay. It's medical grade plastics that we use for the sensor.
In terms of business model, how do you charge for this? What makes the most sense?
Our business model is that the pharma is paying relatively small fee for the bolus itself. And then it's a subscription for access to the online monitoring via the cloud, which is basically $3 a month per cow.
Got it. Okay. And that seems like a reasonable price to pay to ensure your cow's milking optimally?
Absolutely. There's almost an instant payoff because we can detect mastitis, for example, up to four days before first clinical signs. And if the farmer is notified that his cow very likely has mastitis or is running into danger that a mastitis outbreak is showing up, he can take conventional measures instead of giving antibiotics, because first of all, he saves the money for the antibiotics. And second, if the farmer gives antibiotics to the dairy cow, he cannot sell the milk anymore.
And there's also a sustainability benefit that I'd love to talk about, because cows are a source of greenhouse gas and we're not getting rid of cows anytime soon. So can this help cows have less of an impact on the environment?
Yes, because the rumen of the dairy cow is kind of the engine. And we help the farmer such that the design of his food intake, the food he gives to the cow, that this is optimal with the digestion process of the cow. And if this digestion process is running optimally and the energy conversion from the food for the cow such that she can produce milk is optimal, also methane production is low. And this is what we want.
Is there more work to do on the cow front, or do you expand into other animals, goats, sheep?
I get this ask for all kinds of animals, but our ambition and our dedication is towards the dairy business, and we have lots more to do, because with all these data and with this unique situation that we have the measurement of the inner body temperature available for hundreds of thousands of cows or millions of cows worldwide, we can develop our systems towards a true advisory system based on big data and artificial intelligence algorithms. So we are just on the course of applying more and more very cool features and analyzing and monitoring the health of our dairy cows.
Nice. I'm always excited to see the IoT used in such practical applications, especially things that, you know, could help our planet, could help cows, helps provide better milk for people like me. So thank you, Stefan, for coming on the show this week.
Yeah, thank you. And next time you have a glass of milk or your daily whipping cream for your coffee or however you have it, think of this might come from a healthy cow monitored by SmexTech.
And that concludes this week's episode of the Internet of Things podcast. Please join us next Thursday, and don't forget to subscribe. And if you can't get enough IoT news, I would love for you to sign up at www.stacyonIoT.com for our weekly IoT newsletter, where we explain all kinds of things that we don't even get to on the show. Once again, thank you for listening, and please subscribe.